This is year four, going into the fourth draft with Q, and every year it continues to get more and more smooth and better and more in lockstep. It's a great time to toss it out to the personnel staff. I mean, they do a hell of a job. I mean, Scott Pioli, Steve Sable, and the rest of our staff are, you know, they're grinding like crazy to get things ready, tossed up for myself and Dan, and tee us up really, really well so we're able to make the best decisions we can. So, you know, kudos out to the department. Let's just toss it out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, as we prepare for the draft and we're going through it, Thomas and his staff have done a remarkable job of getting ready, the connection they have. And it's always nice for me from an experience standpoint to, you know, draft alongside one of the most tenured GMs in the league. So you wouldn't think Thomas was that old. He's got sweet hair, style, glasses, designer tie. But having that kind of experience obviously pays dividends. So he's one of the very best at what he does, and it certainly goes through the entire staff. So we are so lit to be, you know, we wish tonight was draft night because when you put the work in, you feel ready. Those are the feelings you have. So, yeah, we'll kick it off and get started on today.
I figure I'd have my list here, and I'd just swap it with you for your list. Go home, okay?
All right.
But,
okay.
He declined that. He's going to decline that offer?
Yeah, I think, yes.
Yeah, okay.
All right. We've got a bigger staff than your staff, Led, I got to tell you.
And better play.
That's right.
But what are some of the themes that you all are expected to unfold and, you know, and what type of players may be available at the back end of the draft? I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening in front of you with the quarterbacks and so forth.
Well, I would say that this draft, different than probably most drafts that I've been involved with, and I know for Q and I, this is an important draft and an interesting draft because I think there are a number of positions that we're looking at more than other years. I feel like in other years we've been really honed in on potentially one or two, and we have a number of positions that we think can really benefit us at 26, and that's actually really exciting. So it gives us, in our minds, gives us the opportunity to consider. Of course, we'll always consider moving up, but also the idea of moving back as well because we feel like there are a number of really good players at 26 and beyond.
How much does your board really change this time of year? How long has it been set? Let's say the top 50 players.
It just ain't changed 2 minutes ago with Dan and I doing some work. I mean, we're always adjusting in a good way. I mean, I'm talking about our adjustments. We'll bring up another player that we may have, you know, something that we want to revisit, and we'll put on another couple game tapes, and before you know it, we may adjust, you know, a point here and there.
And sometimes what happens, Jeff, too, is three or four people may have the same grade, so that could be an adjustment when you first have a board that's put up, you know, everybody's given a grade, so this stack of three or this stack of four, how do they get maneuvered around? So of those 50 players, if four of them have this grade, another four have this grade, how do those four maneuver around? So that's probably more posturing within a stack of guys.
The change that you just made, how deep into the draft was it? How deep into the board was it?
How deep as in, was it at the front of the board or was it at the back end of the board?
You're not giving me the name. You're not giving anything away. But I mean, how far?
No, I mean, it's
yeah, not that far.
No, not that far. But it's. I mean, they're legit conversations. That's what's great about this. It's what's great about our relationship to be able to. We could be passing each other, or we could be calling each other at night, or we could be waking up in the morning on the way down to breakfast and say, you know, I've been thinking about this. Let's revisit X, Y, and Z on this player. And I think it's great. And I again. Kudos to our personnel staff because they continue to work their own stack breaking on their own side, and we continue to discuss that as well. So it's just a really good. I think it's just a really good smooth, and it's back to not only myself and Dan on this, of course, and not only the personnel department. The way that the coaches are interacting with our scouting staff every year, they get closer and closer and know each other and know what the coaches are looking for. Not only from the standpoint of the front board and the back board, but even in the CFA area, which we're already talking about, so that's important.
You can't even give me the number.
No, I can't give you the number or the position.
But that's only like one.
Teen. I don't know.
As far as the amount of spaces they're moved, based on their, you're not taking. Nobody's jumping from 20 to 10 at this point. It's a spot here or there, correct?
That's correct, yeah. I think what ends up happening is you are always looking and adjusting, whether it's through workouts, in the end, it is about how the players play on the field. That's the end all be all. Of course, there are nuances to drafting that we believe here. What we may be looking for at 26, at 58, at 90, we have discussions all the time about that. And like I said earlier, I mean, there are a number of different positions this year versus just one that we're focused on.
There are guys that are off your board at this point. Is there anything that you'll think you'll see between now and Thursday that would put them back on for any given reason?
If we had any players that were off our board, we would not bring them back on the board for one reason or another.
Yeah, not at this point. They would have already had to do something, a visit, like something to clean up that would happen. But, yeah.
There is, guys, if you guys can talk about this position-wise, defensive tackles, how many would you say are first- or second-round talents?
In the draft?
Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, who knows? There's probably 6 to 8. You know, now first-round talents doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go in the first round, right? We see a lot of players over the years, and it's an interesting spot where those guys end up going in the second round for one reason or another. They are the talent of a first-round player, but are moved into the second round for a number of things. We've seen it here. I mean, we were able to get certain players in the past that were first-round talents but got to the second round. So that happens a lot at that position.
Yeah. It's awesome, isn't it? All right. Mm-hmm. Talking about guys and I would say at the spot, like, also versatility comes in. You know, some in today's NFL, there's certainly some people that are defensive ends that play defensive tackle. So I'll just muddy your conversation more, which is awesome. And where does each team feature a guy? You know, like, okay, you may say he's a defensive tackle, and a 34 team may say he's a 34 D end. Does that make sense? So it's like there's big guys that could go in those, you know, first two rounds that are really going to start and have an impact. Not all of them will play D-tackle.
There's so much, obviously, secrecy from organization to organization this time of year.
Paranoia, too. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you used that word. Yes. So I'm just curious, do both of you, whether you're talking to coaches or you're talking to GMs or whoever you're talking to, any anecdotal evidence or something that you could say that would sort of illustrate kind of what goes on this time of year when you guys are talking to other people and just how you guys are guarded or to what lengths you both go to not, basically like you're giving a press conference and not saying anything?
Well, I mean, the reality.
It's called like it is, right?
That's right. Well, he's been saying that every year since we've been here.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you're even here today, to be honest with you. I know.
It's just to this.
Yes, I know. I would say this from my perspective, and Dan can comment on the coaching perspective. Every year, you know, you have people in the league who, of course, your allies and that you trust, and they may have certain information or something that may be useful, whether it's trade information, opportunities, scuttle around the league about who's, you know, being talked about where. There's a lot of discussion amongst the general managers. We don't talk about it to you, but there's always discussion, as there are, quite honestly, with a lot of the agents in the league. Now, that's a little bit dicey at times, and I respect agents, of course, but they have their own agenda. But there's a lot of discussion about, you know, where interest is, and so I think there's a lot more discussion than people believe. And again, they're just projections. There's obviously not a whole bunch of concrete. Every once in a while with someone, you can dig up something that can be really useful in your approach to draft day.
Thomas, you've always had a history of moving in the first round. When it comes to that decision on draft night, how much of it is the cost of the move versus the player that you're going to acquire?
The player that we're going to acquire obviously has driven that most of the time. Of course, we're always thinking about costs. We think about where our team is, where our team's roster is. You know, obviously, not to get into talking about 11, but, I mean, what we did in 11 had a lot to do with where we, not only with the player, which we believed in, of course, but where we were as an organization. And I would say that even last year, moving up for TAC, right? We had a lot of discussions about, you know, where we were with our pass rush. And of course, we need to look at the compensation. We have to be realistic about it. But we pretty well know when we're looking to move up 5, 6, 8, 10, 21, what it's going to cost us, and we get our heads around that a lot sooner than just on draft day, and that's the big thing.
When you have all these quarterbacks, are you sitting back hoping they go early, or do you want to see them fall? That's more advantageous to you. At the
10 quarterbacks. We want them all. We want as many to go as possible.
But, I mean, is it more likely that
there's at least 10 first-round quarterbacks? No.
Is it more likely to think that a trade is viable if the quarterbacks go real quick at the top, and then it leaves all the players there, or if they're more spread out and quarterbacks fall, does that make it harder?
I think anytime you're looking at a guy going, and I think that this first round projection of the first round quarterbacks will give us a lot more indication of what's going to go between basically 10 and 26. So it doesn't really matter whether they all go at 10 in the first 10 or wherever, or they go after that, as long as, you know, they're going before 26 and it provides us more opportunity. I mean, that's a big thing for us, right? We and Dan and I did this yesterday, and you start putting up 26 or 25 players, right? Okay, he's going to go, and we do that, I don't know how many times, just trying to project who might be there. We have so many scenarios, and again, more scenarios probably this year than we have had in quite a while.
How many
scenarios?
Yeah, how many different, like, mock drafts or scenarios would you say?
Well, we don't call them mock drafts because that's for the media. But we call them, what do we call them? We just, our mock pick situation, for instance, I'd say we probably have 8 to 10. I mean, different scenarios. Not only 8 to 10 different guys we're picking there, but if we picked a certain player in the first round versus at 26 versus 58, that may change, and then we'll adjust where we take two different guys at 58 and 26, and that plays out many different ways, of course, and how the rest of the draft would play out. So we actually go through, we try to project into the, you know, fourth and fifth. We don't have a fifth round and six rounds of where we'll be all the way through our draft. That's tough to do, of course. One and two are usually a lot easier. One, two, and three are a lot more focused, but you're really projecting when you start talking about what's going to go there potentially at 5, 6, 7.
Right, and there's definitely a way to say 1, 2, and 3 could look different if, depending on, okay, he's at 1, he's at 2, he's at 3, then the next one, they're flipped to a different position at 1, a different position at 2. Mm-hmm. So,
but how much would really affect you at 26?
Yeah, I think there's legitimate, you know, people to say that's, if it's 3 or 4 together, that we go through the process, mm-hmm. he versus him, how, you know, those two things to compare.
Have you both identified a player or players that you would consider trading up for if a certain guy is still there at a certain number?
There's no question in past years we've done that, and like I said, we are always open to it, and we talk about it, but we also talk about what I had mentioned earlier. We talk about the idea of this being a really interesting year because there are a number of players that we think that are going to could affect us in a very positive way at 26. So in lieu of trading away players, if we feel we're going to get someone there or a number of different players there and opportunities, we may not be as apt to, but we'll always be looking.
Thomas, has that little circle of trust, apologies to Robert De Niro on that one, I guess, has that changed over the years, or is it still basically the same people around the league that you trust to be, I guess you said, ally? Mm-hmm.
I think it changes, no question. It definitely has changed. We have some great allies, and Dan does, of course, and I do, but sometimes they're allies when we're at the combine, you know, sitting down having food and chopping it up in certain ways, but they change when you start realizing as you do business, there are certain people that you can do business with and you can not only trust, you can be efficient and effective with it all, and there are other people out there that unfortunately may string it along a certain way, and we may think it's not worth our time.
Right. Dan, Keith, maybe sometimes being mutually beneficial.
Yeah, I think if we'd all, in our own personal life, you know, the friends that, like, they call and you're like, man, I can't wait to talk to you. Man, it's been too long. And then there's the other friend that calls, like, yeah, what do you need? And so there's definitely that kind of friendship. Like, yeah, man, sorry I couldn't get back to you. You know, maybe we can catch up after the draft. And there's definitely friends who are like, man, I've been wanting to talk to you. So we all have friends like that in our own lives that we you know, what's the thing that when the phone rings, is it oh good or oh God? Like, yeah. And so,
that's right.
You know, we always want to be the one on the other end of that saying, oh good, man, I can't wait to talk to this person. So allies for sure. But at the end, then you trust what you do, you know, like no one knows our team better than us. So it happens more where people are trying to gain information. Hey, Dan, have you seen this D-tackle? What do you think, you know, as opposed to reaching out? But, like, you really just kind of trust the process. Like, when you put the work in, you're ready, so you don't – I just don't like to go down that road because then it gets into more second-guessing, you know. they don't know our team like we know our team. They don't know our players like we know our players. So I try to avoid it, you know, when I can. I don't mind throwing some stuff out there if it's, you know, going to help.
Yeah. Dan, since you've been here, it may be coincidence, may not, but you've gone defense with the first two picks. That may have been because you took over a defense that was ranked 32nd in the league. Are you at a point right now where you feel more comfortable that best player available versus I need to get better players on defense is the way to go, given especially that there are so many high-level defensive players slated for the first round of this draft?
Yeah, I would say, in my opinion, the best way to go about it is still, like, what's the best thing for the team? And at that time, that's what Thomas, I thought, was the best things for the team. And by no means do we think, and I think it's unfair to the rest of the players, like, it's not a one-pick draft. And so, like, it's a collection of guys and a collection of a draft class. And so sometimes the earlier you pick, you expect that guy to have a bigger impact, you know, when you're picking higher. But at the end of it, no, it's just like what's best for the team. And that's the, you know, scenarios that Thomas was referring to earlier. Okay, how does one affect two? How does two affect three? And all the different, you know, ways to navigate down that trail to get the players that you want, that you think's best for the team. So there's need. There's just the strict talent for it. So it's actually a lot of fun to go through in the process and get you thinking and engaging. It's sometimes just, have you thought about it in this way, or this is how we'd play? And so that's why I like communicating with Thomas to say, I think he'd start. I think he'd be this, you know, specific position. So we can say, if they were here on the team today, what would their role be? And that's, you know, kind of the good part about figuring out what that role would be in some cases before they get here. And I think if you try to push too far, like, it's not the best fit, but let's try it anyway, I think that's when it can be hard.
Dan is really good about talking about that, roles, how they'd fit in, especially on the defensive side. You know, the percentage of play time projected. Again, we don't know exactly, but that helps a lot when we start talking about, you know, okay, we're going to invest the 26th pick on a player that is going to play this percentage and what they're going to be in this in our defense or our offense, of course. It just helps a lot. That's why I continue to stress how important our communication is and how important it is to be on the same wavelength when we're communicating. And it's not just like, bring me anyone. We'll deal with them. That's probably, that's not music to a general manager's ears, right? Because we really want to know as specifically as possible how these guys are going to fit in. No one wants to bring a guy in and all of a sudden, yeah, I like the guy. He's a good athlete. He moves around. He can run fast. But I really just, after the fact, I realize he doesn't fit. That's what I really appreciate with our approach.
You both know the percentages in general over time, how many draft picks hit and miss over the NFL. Given that, have you both, you know, I assume you have sort of reflected on the last three drafts and sort of understand how extraordinary your drafts have been over the last few years, how many starters you've gotten out of it, how many impact players you've gotten out of it, how unusual that is?
Well, I don't look at it as much as I look at what I just mentioned. I just think that it's so important to be clear with what we need, and sometimes it's not just on the number one, you know, the starting position, but again, there are some next level players that are really important. And I think I've said this time and again, the fact that Dan is really open to playing younger guys and getting them time on the field today and as soon as possible is great for us. Instead of tucking them away and hoping, you know, the first year maybe sees a little bit of spot time on special teams, the second year, well, okay, he has, something happens, and then by the time you know it, it's third year and we haven't truly gotten a feel for what this player is. That's the most unnerving thing as a co-team builder, when you're sitting there looking at someone in the third year and you're thinking, we haven't even had a chance to know this, the ability of this guy. So that's a big thing for us. And, you know, you can comment on that. It's I think it's really important.
It's a lot of fun also to see what the guys can do, and not necessarily just the early pick. So I enjoyed looking at the guys who would come in later too. And this year there's going to be a number of guys that are really going to add, and they're going to play this year. So I think that's really cool.
You talked about how this year is interesting in that you haven't really honed in on just one position. How has that changed the way you guys have gone about the draft, looking at so many different positions as possibilities, or has it changed it at all?
Yeah, and what I mean by that is we've honed in on every position individually that we're looking at, and that may be five or six positions, meaning that it's not the sole focus, which I think it's been really good. And it really has allowed us to spend a lot of time talking about our team even more so, right? So not only will we talk about the need at a starting position at a certain position, the number one spot, but also the depth a lot more, I think, when you're talking about that many more positions. Again, 26, it's ripe for a lot of really good football players in our mind, and we've had so many discussions, and we keep coming back to those discussions, you know, referring to what we were talking about at the beginning of the day. I mean, we could come in, and we'll go back up here later on today and continue to discuss those six-odd positions that we're looking at. So it's good.
To follow that up, basically, did that mean this year you guys were out more on the road and kind of actually seeing these guys since there are more positions? Or is it the same amount relying on scouts, or did you guys get out a little more maybe and see some players?
Yeah, no more for us than any other time. That we really enjoy that time to get to meet the guys and visit with them. So the whole process going from, you know, Indy and trips and you know, seeing guys, and then we're also get to bring a number of them here. So that whole process works great. And you know, like from the free agency side, then, you know, that piece, how does that fit in with the draft? That's a factor too. But no more so than other years, I would say. Is that right?
Right. And to that point as well, I mean,
no less so.
No less. Right. Yeah. But we're really, I mean, those spring visits that we have, and I know there's been a lot written about the guys who have gotten injured, you know, because they're doing the spring workouts, and we've seen that, and we're very cognizant of it, of course. But probably more so, I'd say even more so, because this is important. This isn't just trying to maintain our use of Arthur's plane in the spring. Literally, the spring is invaluable for us as we're spending more time with these players and we're alone with them at their campus, whether they work out on the field or not. That's one side. The other side is spending a lot of really important time without 10 or 12 other teams there like you might have on a pro day. So it's really important for us.
Thomas, you've been at this for 10 years now. There's been an uptick in trades recently, in the last couple of years, and we've even seen it leading up to this draft. A player that you said that you wouldn't be open to trading before, if an offer comes on draft night that would move you into a position for a player that you want, is that something you'd be open to again? Maybe a player in the last year of his deal that, you know, you might not be able to re-sign that you could move on draft night? Is that more of a possibility because trades are more happening?
T, he's referencing Tevin Coleman. I'll just clear that to you.
You're referencing Tevin Coleman. Okay. I had no idea what you were talking about.
I knew you did. I just wanted to
Okay. Well, hypothetically, of course, we're highly respectful towards our players, and we really like our roster right now. That's important. And I don't go into the draft thinking about trading any of our players, and I would speak for Dan as well. I mean, we are really focused on the players we have. We think that we are in a really good place with, you know, who we have right now. Of course, you have to be open-minded enough to listen to someone, but I mean, it's rare that we would do that. It's rare on game day, so to speak, on draft day that it happens. I mean, I have my own beliefs about what's happening in the league now with all these trades. There are a lot of trades. To me, there are a lot of younger general managers and head coaches who are so hyper aware of achieving now in year one, two, and three. And if things aren't working right away, man, they are ready to move and they are ready to. There's a lot of that now. I think much more than there was 10 years ago. So I just think there's a lot more of an open mind, open-minded approach to how people want to move their people. And what we're really happy with is we believe in the brotherhood. Not saying that, you know, some people will move, and of course we've moved on from some people recently. But we really like where we are, and that would not be our approach unless it really sort of knocked us back.
Dan, culture is so important for you both. Yep. How many of your draft picks do you visit with face-to-face?
As many as you can. And the reason why, Zach, is like, you know, the combine has like some job fair feel to it, you know? And so you can imagine if you were to hire somebody, you know, for the station, that you'd really like to spend some time and make sure that was the fit. And whether a player was with us for 10 days, 10 months, or 10 years, all of them will have a chance to influence, you know, the culture and the environment here. And I think that's one of the coolest things, you know, knowing that if we can continue to keep bringing in guys that we really believe in and their connection to one another, I think that'll only continue to grow stronger and stronger and, you know, literally pass it down from one player down to the next player down to the next player for years and years. So we always kind of have a consciousness for whoever we bring in, this person's going to have a chance to influence this environment. Like I said, whether it's 10 days as a, you know, tryout player or 3 days or 10 months if he was here for a season or 10 years. And I think, man, I really respect that about how a person can influence it because you don't always get a chance to think of it in those terms, and we certainly do.
And just to follow up on that. Would you draft a player that you haven't had an individual meeting or visit with, knowing that they can have that impact on everybody?
Yes, and I'll speak for Thomas on this one because of the his staff and the work that they've done. Now, it would be more unlikely to say select a player that his guys haven't been out and seen and interviewed. So, like, yes, it would be unlikely for every pick or every college free agent for us to have that interaction with. But because of the way the program set up through Thomas and the personnel, they've had those interactions. So we trust them, and we trust the training that Thomas and the guys have given them on that. And so if there was just no one that you hadn't met, yeah, I would say no. That would be real risky to do. I'm saying not your organization hadn't got with. Like, if we met somebody over at Chili's and he said, yeah, I'm a good player, and like, no. Yeah.
Well,
it's close. Yeah. For those who live around here, they know what I was talking about.
To Q's point, I mean, 1, 2, 3, and 4, since he's been here, we've interacted with all of those guys, of course, myself and Dan. Of course, there are some guys later in the draft that pop up that you don't. It's important, though. I mean, I will say this. Dan does a great job of diffusing and sort of making the players feel comfortable when they come through the door. You can imagine his personality is such that you get a true feel for what these guys are. They're not rigid. Within 2 minutes with him, they're not rigid. If they're rigid, they're very rigid. We've had a couple interesting situations where, the interaction has been at a standstill, and you realize, like, if he can't loosen them up quickly, then there's something that we're dealing with. It's not good or bad necessarily, but you get a real feel of whether they'll fit into this organization, and the mindset around here is big. But we've gone out, I mean, final throws of draft preparation, and even last year I remember jetting off to a couple towns away at a it was a Waffle House of all places. I'm sitting at a Waffle House eating pancakes literally because I wanted to be part of it. Right? You guys were yes.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be? No.
Waffles.
It's called the Waffles.
Oh, okay. I was eating water.
Right.
Okay.
Right. He might have just had water. I don't know.
Right. It might have been water. I literally was eating something. Okay. But we were there.
Tell the truth about that.
Good point. No, I swear I had pancakes there. There are no pancakes there?
No.
Are we really having this conversation?
Friends don't let friends eat pancakes. Right. That's what Waffle House.
Long and short of it is we were at the Waffle House, and I brought my own pancakes from somewhere else. And we sat down and we were talking, but we met. We were just trying to find a place to meet finally with a player that we were really interested in that happened to sort of surface for us, and it was important for us. So,
yeah.
About three more, guys.
This question's for both of you. Before the combine, you had said that a couple of the positions that you thought were really strong in this year's draft class was the offensive line and the cornerbacks. Through your visits and all the tape you've watched, are there any other position groups that have really stood out to you guys that you think is really strong this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let Dan talk about it because it's his love. But, I mean, the defensive front, there's some interesting people there as well.
Yeah, I would agree that the same assessment he made from, the offensive line and corners, was certainly, strong. But it's cool to see that there is depth, with the big guys on both sides of the line of scrimmage this year.
Anyone else? You mentioned the, variety of positions this year compared to previous years, but earlier you talked about the juxtaposition with adding through free agency and the draft. Have any of your moves in free agency this year kind of narrowed your focus in terms of the draft, or is everything still on the table?
No, it definitely has. I mean, we've been fortunate. We think to have acquired people that are going to be really important for us in helping our depth at those positions. And doesn't mean we will not draft at that position, but it adjusts where we're looking on the board. Again, the difference between pick 26 and 58 and 90 is drastic, of course. So it all plays into it. It becomes a chess game in certain ways. This is a really important part of it all down the stretch.
Would you say it fits in with where you guys are deep in the draft? This draft works out well for you with the amount of depth and guys. I mean, when you saw this coming up, did you say this looks? If you're going to be way down in the draft, this is a good year to be there.
I believe so. I mean, I
don't want to be there every year, but that means you've got a good year.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, does this year work out particularly well for you guys?
It feels really good to know that there are going to be some very legit contributors to this team right away, right. We believe, at 26 if we stay put. Again, that said, we're always going to be aggressive if we see someone that we're interested that we think are going to be impact players for us that we basically need on this team to make take us to another level, which we hopefully we're going to get at 26.
A couple of the teams that you played in the playoffs, they made some improvements up front on the defensive line. Did that make you at all look at your offensive line a little bit deeper and say, hey, you know what, we've got to make sure going into this year that that's on point, you know, because...
Yeah, I recognize where you're heading with that. Yeah, you don't want to go, like, just base everything on another club, Vaughn. So you're mindful of who's out there. But I think everything, you know, for us, when we're if you're doing any comparison first, always starts with the division. And that's where you start. But I think you have a watchful eye, you know, like in the free agency portion of things. There's teams that definitely add and definitely, you know, take back from that. So I recognize it, and I think, you know, speaking of L.A. and Philly, both of them added good, you know, defensive linemen this year. But it doesn't affect your thinking for, okay, now how to combat that, like move one to hit the other. No.
One more?
Good? Come on, one more.
It's, one more. I'm leaving it open.
Where again is this Waffle House?
it's in the state, I will say that.
Can you check and see on the menu if there is any?
It's a well-known fact that Waffle House was known.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Aha.
No, we were at Waffle House, weren't we?
We were. Okay. I don't think you ate.
Obviously, I
ate, but you did not, right? you were more engaged. You wanted to talk to the prospect.
Yes, that's right.
You were Waffle House.
I was. We were both there together. I can confirm it was Waffle House.
We were.
So. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right.